You're listening to 66.6 FM, Radio TOVH, The Flush.
You are now listening to the Toilet Hill Radio Show. I am Joe Thrash and Kill. With me, I've got my good buddy, Brother Side. How's it going, man?
It's going so well, man. I got my coffee. It's Sunday morning as we're recording this. It's Wednesday morning for you, bros. But, you know, it's a good damn day to be alive. It's cooling down a little bit this week. You know, you don't have the fucked up, warm, awful weather. Things are a little bit better, a little bit nicer. Just about there in hoodie weather where I can cover up my fat body shapes with, like, you know, extra layers. That's always nice.
It's podcasting weather, folks.
That's right.
It's when you get the warmest ticks. We're bringing you a good show today. Hopefully, we don't know where Jordan is. We hope he's okay. But in the meantime, we've got this one covered. You were showing me this thing. You posted it on Twitter,
mm-hmm.
and it was baffling.
A little bit, yeah.
Can you tell me? Well, I know what it is. This is for the benefit of the fucking listener. You know, you guys are behind. Can you tell the listener what this was that you were watching?
So, I recently followed a channel that was suggested to me by a YouTube guitarist that I like a lot, and I can shout out real quick. Ryan Bruce Fluff. He's not Glenn Fricker, and his mixes are actually good, so I like watching him a lot. He shouted out this YouTube channel called, I believe it's Punk Rock MBA. And what it's about is how you can become successful promoting your own music, doing stuff DIY as much as possible, you know, just sort of discussing all the different aspects of the music business and the industry and, you know, all that good stuff online.
So based on that description, that seems like something that, like, we would be really into. We talk about this kind of thing all the time.
That's why I follow it.
Yeah, how to save money, how to be DIY. You know, that's our shit.
It's so definitely I fucks with that, man. So it's run by one individual, Finn McKinstry. Did you say his name was
McKinty?
McKinty, Finn McKinty. Mm-hmm. Cool dude, regular chap. So, nothing mean to say about him.
What was this video that was posted from this channel?
So, in this video in particular, he had a thumbnail with a bunch of emojis puking on the phrase music blogs, and he talked about how they were totally useless for the promotion of your music. Mm-hmm. That was his point.
That's an interesting point. Sounds pretty hot takey. And as the proprietor of a music blog, I'm not sure that I agree, but I am curious.
But I don't know how unbiased your opinion is, Joe.
True.
Can we say for sure that you are a conscientious objector here?
Well, I mean, I will say that my entire livelihood is wrapped up in this blog.
It's like you put too many hours into this now. You can't back down.
Yeah, I make literally dozens of dollars a month from this. Actually, that's not true. It's all sitting in an account right now until we can afford legal fees.
Right on, man. Especially for all that shit we've talked about, Tim Allen.
Yep.
So the main crux of his point was that, you know, bands are spending all this money on PR that get them in all these different music blogs, and they get nothing from it. They get mm-hmm. no fans, they get no views, they get no money out of album sales. Maybe it's just me personally. I know that's not true for me in my life and the people that I were. You know, maybe I'm in a bubble. You know, I surround myself with bloggers like you guys and other bloggers on Twitter, and we talk about each other's writings and stuff. And I feel like every band I've heard about has been from people posting rave reviews about loving their music or otherwise. And there's a hyperlink right there to where I can buy the album. And guess what? That's where I go if it's fucking awesome. So
yeah, you get to listen to it like embedded on the page itself.
Right.
So I'm not going to like pretend that blogs are as essential as they were in, say, like, I don't know, 2007. Mm-hmm. Like back mm-hmm. then, you know, a handful of blogs, like they were tastemakers. Like that's where you got your shit from. If you got featured on, say, Brooklyn Vegan or Pitchfork or something like that, you could sell lots of records. And yeah. that's not the case anymore because we've democratized the internet, and every Yahoo has a blog that's about poop.
and toilets.
And toilets, yeah. But, you know, anecdotally, at least what I've seen with our site is when we feature a band, like with a review or a premiere or something, hundreds of people listen to it, sometimes more. And sometimes those people buy the record and then tell their friends, and their friends buy the record. And it's kind of like a whole cascading thing, you know? It shows up after you buy the record, it shows up in your Bandcamp feed that somebody you like, their taste, they bought it because they heard it on Toilet of Hell, and then more people buy it. That's they tell two friends, and they tell two friends, and they tell two friends. Nobody's getting rich from any of this, but you get your name known, you get, you know, a little bit of money, and to be honest, if you're in a niche kind of act, like, that's success. That's what you can get out of it.
Yeah, and I, you know, I don't have anything personally against this guy. As you pointed out to me earlier, it's actually the guy who went under the moniker Sergeant D from Metal Sucks.
Yeah, Sergeant D, who wrote for Metal Sucks and had his own blog, Stuff You Will Hate.
Yeah, which, by the way, I don't know. It was up for, like, how many years, and he never, like, fixed the template of it. There was always half of it running off the side of the screen whenever he wrote things.
Well, as somebody who broke our own site the other day, maybe that's not dog on for that. We can talk about his site after this, but let's continue with the video that he was talking about.
Well, what he said for an alternative was, oh, get influencers to notice you and rep you. Get Anthony freaking Tano to notice your band, and you will be a lot better off than if you were to go through a music blog.
Yeah, I mean, so that was like YouTubers and influencers. You need them to notice you and shout you out, and then you'll get big. And right. That seemed like that is really putting the cart before the horse, because how the fuck do you think that you're gonna, like, okay, sure, you wrote a really great song. Guess what? Lots of people write great songs and nobody listens to them. How the fuck do you think that you're gonna appeal to somebody who gets literally thousands of people like, Anthony, listen to my record a day, you know?
Right. You don't think Anthony's fucking DMs are stacked, man?
Yeah.
Come on. He's doing the same thing we are. It's just he's on YouTube doing it.
Yeah.
And he's got some funny editing going on, and that's his thing. And he got very popular doing it, for what it's worth. I mean, say what you want about the guy's politics, but yeah, he's very popular. Lots of young people like him. So I can see why you would want to go for someone like Fantano, but probably where Anthony gets his ideas to review stuff is from music blogs and what's buzzworthy in the blogosphere.
Yeah, that's the thing. You get buzzworthy, you get heat. Your peers start talking about a certain band and you listen to it. That's the way it goes. Like, you know, the little enclave of music writers on Twitter is not immune to this. If, you know, one person starts amping something up and another person does, like, everybody follows in line and gives it a listen at least. And then you know, you get the inevitable hot take, like, actually, this is overrated and you're all plebs.
Which is most of what everyone says. And that's how I found out my best bands. The best bands ever, the ones that I love, are the ones where I see people hot taking about how much they suck. Like the ones that, like, people, like, there's a specific few that will forever remain unnamed because I don't want to give up my, my tricks here, tricks of the trade. But there's a few people that if they hate something and they talk about hating it, then that's how I find out the new music I'm really going to like.
Yeah, I think I know who you're talking about.
I think some of us might, but, yeah, no, he was going off about how it's interesting you said cart before the horse, because he's claiming the thing of blogs now. He's saying that the buzz from your band starts first and then blogs cover you.
That's, I mean, absolutely not how it works.
Yeah, not in our case anyway. I know you guys are very underground and you consider the little guy and you listen to the stuff that gets emailed to you. And if it's great, you give it the shout out, man.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible that Yeah, it's possible that he's referring to bands that maybe have higher commercial aspirations than the kind of stuff that we care about. And to those bands, I would say give it up. You did not. You just need to. Sorry, man, that's not going to happen.
Right. Which leads us to our next point, which is how, and I don't want to go into this forever, but I wanted to make mention of it because I think it's kind of the final nail in the coffin in regards to how we feel about this. But Brett Hinds again comes out and says how he hates making music with Mastodon and how his job is, you know, a rock artist sucks and it's the most grueling job ever. And he's being sucked, quote, like a dry hyena titty, which I thought was hilarious. That's a great take. But I just, you know, look, man, I think Mastodon is the last big rock band. And I think it's evident how much they're struggling. I just don't think that the rock star lifestyle is really in metal music anymore, except very, very, very rarely. And you're not going to see a lot more of this sort of stuff because we see how much it sucks at the top.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's because Brett Hinds is constantly talking about how much his life sucks. Yeah. That having to do this music thing is like literally killing him. And I think if you look at, like, you know, you've worked this hard all of your career and you've got this far and it sucks, maybe quit, man. Maybe, like, scale it back a little bit. If you've reached this unsustainable level and you don't want to keep going, don't keep going.
Yeah.
Scale it back, man. Mastodon doesn't need to be, like, an arena band forever. I know I've said that before, but it's the same thing. Like, if you reach an unsustainable system, fucking cut it down.
Peaks and valleys, man. You get to the top. I don't think Sugar Ray is selling out arenas anymore. You know, it's like you get up there and then you go back down and it's okay. Now you can play bars again. Chill out. You know, play a few shows a year and look, get another steady job. Do something else.
Yeah, it's, man. It's always, like, go be a builder for a couple of years. Take some time off, then come back and have a new record and people will sell out again to see you.
Yeah, it's just how it is. But I don't know, man. I think that metal music's future, first of all, it's not going to be dead. And the music, it's not over. And all this other shit about people saying that Spotify ruined music. It's just that the industry is different. There's no more millionaires. The money's changed hands. It's just going to be the guys who really, you know, care about their art and still unfortunately have to hold down a regular job. Making great music and sharing great music.
That's the thing. Like, we talk about it all the time. Like, there's not much money to be made in making music. There is money to be made in, I guess, this kind of career coach tech that I think the punk rock NBA is involved in. So, okay. Yeah. So I used to read Sergeant D's work a lot back in the day. I thought he was one of the funniest, you know, writers in music.
Yeah, sort of inspired by him, honestly.
Yeah, I found out about a lot of bands I really like now through his writing. I think I probably wouldn't be involved in blogging and podcasting and shit if it wasn't for him, because, like, I got really into Despise You, Power Violence band from the 90s, and, you know, in Googling them, I found this piece he wrote about 90s power violence for his old site, Metal Inquisition, I think was the one. And then I just started following his work from there. So extremely funny writer, had a lot of cool things to say about, you know, genres I really like slam and power violence. And then, like, he went through this kind of weird midlife crisis.
Mm-hmm.
Where he got really, really into, I guess, teen pop and like modern country music and stuff, and it was just kind of baffling. And then I recall that he had a couple of other contributors for his site that, like, were super racist. I remember one of them wrote this piece that he was making fun of this punk band that was fronted by a black kid. And he said, like, he had a joke about, I'm surprised he could stop eating watermelon for long enough to record that take. And I was like, holy shit, that is bafflingly racist.
Dude, the most racist thing I've ever said on my blog, and I know it in the back of my head in case anyone calls me out about it. It's just like, it's like, we don't discriminate in metal except against black people. And then that was it. Like, that was the sentence. And it was to mock, you know, guys like this shithead, I guess.
I mean, I don't know what his deal is. I don't care to know either. Like, I don't, he doesn't write anymore. And I don't follow the stuff. And based on like what he's doing with this, the punk rock NBA thing, it's clear to me that this is another success win mindset, business professional coach guiding you to make the best decisions. You just need to give me money.
Yeah. Another self-help guru kind of
exactly.
situation.
And the world is filthy with them. And I think it's a little sketch that you would want to go after like kids that clearly don't know any better and try to tell them that you can be somewhat successful doing it DIY if you just follow these tips. Like, bother Anthony Fitano on YouTube to cover your band. I don't think that there's, it's easy to tell somebody what to do. I will say that much. Yeah. I don't think that the advice is worth a goddamn, though.
Yeah, I think this is a few years coming. You're right. I mean, I don't mean to be super cynical about what the guy's doing. Boy, I hope he doesn't listen to this, just because I know he won't be happy. But
hey, man, I really
like. It's like you came at us, man. You came at us. You know, well, this is what we do.
I don't even care about that. Like, that doesn't matter to me. Like, sure, blogging is stupid. It's a waste of time. It's not a good way to make your band known. That does not bother me. It really doesn't. It's just I don't trust anyone that tells you how to be successful. That goes from like televangelists to like grifters like Gary Vaynerchuk, people that are gonna give you business advice and tell you you just need to pull yourselves up by the bootstraps and do these things, these five simple tricks, and you'll be successful. It's all a load of horseshit because a lot of these like Gary Vaynerchuk is somebody that bothers me a lot because I see his work shared all the time. He's one of those guys that says, you know, if you're not working 80 hours a week, you don't want to be successful. Gary Vaynerchuk was born a millionaire. He was born into a wealthy family, and now he spends his time telling people bootstraps. Fuck that, man. Like, so much of success comes down to your situation when you were born. And if it's not that, it's who the fuck you know. You want to be successful in music? You better know some important people. Are they, you know, that's really what it comes down to. Can you meet the gatekeepers? Can these people put in a word for you? Do you have the money and the free time to not have a real job and somebody pays your rent while you do this shit? That's what it's about.
Yeah, unfortunately. I love my fucking genre. I love where we're at. Like, my dream right now is to just get back in like a bar stage and do some shows and just fucking chill out with the dudes in my area and, like, you know, have a good time. Like, that's a great
goal for music. Have a good time in your spare time. Don't let this ruin your life. Don't lose your apartment because you can't pay rent because you're trying to just, I don't know, make it big in some kind of scene that's been dead for years.
Here's my hot take. All right, we'll cap this off. We'll get to some good positive stuff. Here's my hot take. Mm-hmm. Fuck tours. Like, I think touring is over. I think touring is what's killing a lot of these musicians, burning people out.
You're saying if you're like at a level of success where you're basically nonstop touring.
Yeah, that too, but not even. Even if you're like the little guy, like say you want to start a band just and you want to kind of just go sleep in a van and do the other stuff. It's like, man, you're going to lose whatever job you have if it's a really good high paying job. You can't take a month, 2 months off of work. So
unless you're honestly, like a teacher, man, I don't know. There are honestly ways that you can make this work. But the number one thing is you have to accept nobody's making $1 million and it's probably going to suck. Yeah, if you're passionate about like this is the thing that you want to do with your life, I don't want to stand in anybody's way saying don't do that. I'm just saying be realistic about what you can do with your time and your money.
I just think this expectation that people need to go all over the country to be heard. And it's like, oh, you know, I could have heard you on Spotify, but instead I'm hearing you open up for a band I really wanted to see and your music's all muffled and I didn't hear what the fuck it sounded like anyway because of the shitty PA, you know. I think that's a load of bull. I think we should really just invest time and energy into our local scenes and just kind of go to where it is and hang out and enjoy metal there. And then, you know, use the tools that are given to us to enjoy music from all around the world without this expectation that the bands need to show their ugly, chudsy faces right in front of us so that we know about them, you know? All right.
So from a socialist perspective, I totally agree with the idea of investing in your local scene. As a person who has been involved in a local scene, I am dead set against that idea.
Okay. Fair enough.
I don't know. That's a topic for another day. But I think that unrealistic expectations, just it kills kids, you know? Yeah. Like,
it makes them feel bad about themselves.
It does. It really does. You mean you make it your goal in life to, like, you know, be on a stage and sell some records and basically live a life that was dead before you were born. It's just, it's gone. If you're not in it to create something because it is what drives you, and then eat a lot of shit in the meantime because that's just how it goes, then I don't know. This might not be the right thing for you. But I digress. I think that we are joined by our good buddy now. Jordan, are you there?
Man, I was in the bathroom a really long time. What did I miss?
Well, we learned that blogs are dead, and the only way forward is to harass Anthony Fatano on Twitter so he'll cover your band.
Yeah, Jordan, this is the farewell show. We're all talking about how much we love each other and we're sorry.
Yeah. We're playing our final set as the Titanic sinks.
So this is the No More Blogs 2 tour?
Yeah. That is exactly what it is.
Nice callback.
Yep. So I know that we often are accused of being overly negative on this show. And we talk about
fuck things. Fuck you. No, we're not, asshole.
Piece of shit. Fuck you.
Idiots.
Moron. No, we're not. Jesus.
But I wanted to talk about something briefly, or I don't know, maybe longer, about something positive that I saw because I've been tagged in it by multiple people. And it really, I guess, kind of it made me feel those good chemicals that I rarely feel anymore. I saw, Jordan, you shared it with me, Christian shared it with me, others have shared it with me, that Rolling Stone this week, it was a piece by Christopher Weingarten. Good job, dude. Good job on this. It's called An Oral History of the Judgment Night Soundtrack, 1993's Rap Rock Utopia. Jordan, did you read this? Have you seen this? Have you heard about this?
Well, I did hear and see about it since I sent it to you, but no, I flipped through it, and I think that's a testament to people knowing what you like by having lots of people send it to you, is that it's your sweet spot of rap and rock and early 90s nostalgia.
Right, right. So the piece, you know, it got together all of these people that played on this record and kind of asked him about, like, how it went, how it all came together, what was going on at the time. And it really is basically just another planet from the way things exist now. You know, like, young bands are getting thrown tons of money their way. People are bringing, like, giant guns into the studio just to fuck around. it was a weird thing. And I guess it was all about record labels seeking the next high from Nirvana, because Nevermind had just dropped, like, I think the year before. This was 1993. And just knowing that there was money in this alternative business, they just weren't sure how to get there.
Yeah, rock music was back, and hip-hop and rap was, like, just emerging as something viable.
Yeah, and so kind of the it band that made it all happen with this was Cypress Hill. That band, like, they had the real buzz behind them. Everybody wanted a piece of them, and they kind of made this happen because their manager, a guy named Happy Walters, who at the time was 22 years old. Can you imagine, by the way, like, being 22 years old and having, like, the fate of millions of dollars in your hands?
I can if I listen to the punk rock MBA.
Got him.
Got him.
The way that this guy, Happy, by the way, He approached
Happy. His name's yeah, Happy.
His name's Happy. He approached. I believe it was not Sendog, not Muggs. Who was the other fella from?
Be Real.
Be Real. Yeah.
Okay.
Happy approached Be Real at a bar because he saw him wearing a Michigan tank top. And he was like, "Yo, I just graduated from Michigan. I should manage you." And Be Real is like, "What? I didn't go to Michigan. I just like the shirt, man." And somehow he ended up managing this multi-platinum selling band. They weren't multi-platinum at the time, but they were well on their way. I pulled up Happy's IMDb page, and yeah, it was his first thing was he was the music supervisor for Judgment Night, and then he's just had a hell of a career since then. Like, it's a litany of great movies that he was music supervisor for. Airheads, wow. Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, the movie. Tzu Wong Fu, Thanks for Everything. Kingpin, that Farrelly Brothers classic. What a great movie. And I think that this is the thread that all ties it together. Spawn.
Nice. God damn.
Yeah, the movie that blended techno with metal.
We have a lot to owe to this guy, Happy, that we didn't even know who he was until now.
Exactly. He's done a lot of really cool shit. Other Farrelly Brothers movies, There's Something About Mary. Other Chris Tucker movies, Rush Hour. I guess he won an Oscar, or maybe not an Oscar, some kind of award for The Fighter. The Fighter, with that fella, which Wahlberg is it?
Probably Marky Mark.
Yeah, that's the guy. So.
The one that, you know, assaulted an Asian man because of his race, and everyone kind of forgets about that one.
He blinded him.
Yeah.
Hey, don't forget all of the militant homophobia in the 90s, too. That's important, too.
Come on, guys. He's sorry. Just eat a Wahlburger and forget about it, okay? Well,
I can only forgive him because had he been on that flight, he would have prevented 9/11.
Yeah.
By the way, did you see his... this isn't a total aside. Did you see... he posted to Instagram last week and people were roasting it, like, his daily schedule?
Yes. Yeah,
what a load of shit.
But, like, who's got half an hour to play golf and then that's it?
Well, he wakes up at 2:30 in the morning every morning.
Yes.
And then goes to bed at 7. It's like, you dumb motherfucker, if you just go to bed at 10, you can get up at a normal time.
Push that, right. But there's a lot to be said for getting up in an hour where there's nobody else in the world up. You know,
yeah, that's
especially
fair.
If you live. What's he live in, the Boston area?
I mean, he surely lives like in some kind of far flung, like, gated suburb.
Yeah,
he's in Southie.
Even if he lives in LA, I mean, you know, the traffic's what it is. I grieved him for that originally. I was like, why don't you just scooch the time, you idiot? But then I thought about it and I was like, man, driving around at 3 a.m. kicks ass.
Well, but there's that, and there's also the maybe he just doesn't want to spend time with his family.
Also valid, because he's only got, what, like 20 minutes for him? It's like, yeah. Business calls and family are in the same hour.
Yeah, he gives himself 30 minutes every evening for family time, and then it's right to bed.
No wonder he's breathing so heavy.
He had golf and 2 workouts scheduled for every day, and then like an hour and a half for showering. but this isn't about Marky Mark. He sucks. Moving on. All the dudes from the Judgment Night soundtrack, like, I think Everlast is I'm gonna. This is a rare thing. I think Everlast really shone through here. He was just talking about the movie itself. He's like, "This is a giant fucking piece of shit. I had to get high constantly to keep myself from killing everybody."
Do you remember? I enjoy the movie for what it is.
Yeah, that's
like
fair.
What does he expect? Like, it's a big dumb movie where Dennis Leary is the main bad guy, being a gang leader in Chicago. Like, this isn't high art. It's stupid fun.
I was going to ask what the movie was actually about.
So much. So the movie itself is pretty forgettable, but the soundtrack is really the thing that has given it wings all these years. Like, I think it was a year or two ago that this was like the soundtrack was repressed on vinyl pressed on vinyl for the first time, maybe, for a Record Store Day, and it like sold out immediately, of course. But yeah, I mean, like, there were cool things in here, like, gosh, who is Public Enemy? They had worked with Cypress Hill on Goo, and they had Chuck D, like, record this nonsense vocal line for the song Cool Thing. And then they got together with Cypress Hill to record a song for this, and it's it verified a lot of things for me in that I do not like Sonic Youth at all. They get to the studio, they don't know what they're doing, they don't seem to understand like how hip hop works, so they're just making a lot of noises. And finally, DJ Muggs was able to sample like 1 second of their noises and put drums on it, and they were like, "Okay, you can leave now. We've got what we need.
Get the fuck out of here."
Yeah.
Yeah, Sonic Youth's always been one of those bands that I've just never gotten.
I tried when I was a kid, man. Like, I went and bought a bunch of their records, and they're just, like, unlistenable to me, man. the only good one is, and I say good, there's two good songs on it, is Daydream Nation, because they're, you know, like, two fairly straightforward rock songs on it that don't have just, like, hideous production. but maybe I'm just, you know, a Philistine when it comes to noise rock or something. I don't know. But it seemed like that Sonic Youth was the one that like didn't work for this whole collaboration. I don't know. What's your favorite track from the whole thing, Jordan?
I'm more familiar with the movie than I am with the soundtrack. Wow. But once reading this article, they like helpfully put in a bunch of the songs from it. I kind of like the Faith No More track.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good one. Was that the one that had Booyah Tribe?
Yeah, Booyah Tribe on.
Yeah, that one kicks ass. Another Body Murdered.
It's angry and weird, and the guys from Booyah Tribe also play instruments too, so it's like a real collaboration.
Yeah, the Booyah Tribe guys are like giant Samoan dudes, like 350 pounds, and they look awesome. And like in the oral history here, it was like, yeah, they all carried guns with them everywhere. And like this one guy that, you know, is 350 pounds, like his handgun like was 8 times the size of his fist. So it was just like a cannon.
Have we not gotten more Samoan metal bands?
I know, man. Samoans are the best at football and possibly wrestling and maybe metal.
Possibly
too.
Wrestling.
It just seems like an untapped market.
Samoa. Cool place, I think. Yeah. I don't know. I've never been.
More metal bands, please.
Please. I don't know. It's just all a lot of fun. I don't want to spoil it all for you. I would recommend you guys go look this up on Rolling Stone, the only good article on Rolling Stone.
Of all time ever made. Do you guys know if this predates or postdates Anthrax's Attack of the Killer Bees?
Because I know 1993.
Okay. So Killer Bees, what was that? More like 92, 91?
We already had Bring the Noise. That already happened.
Yeah.
Because I know VH1 loves to like lop on praise for that being like the major breakout rap metal hit.
Yeah, well, the article mentions that first you had Aerosmith and Run DMC, and then you had Public Enemy and Anthrax, which kind of paved the way for this.
Okay. Yeah, I just want to praise Anthrax every second I can between you two guys.
Well, there's the other, Big Four one that people know of. Was like they tried to get Metallica on this record, and in happy words, he said they were so super pure and prissy in those days. In those days, they were the shit. They've obviously aged and probably wish they would have done it. But one of their managers was like, "I guess I'll think about it." And they came back and said, "We'll do it for $1 million." And it's like, we don't have $1 million. Like, well, fuck off then.
And later on the Spawn soundtrack, Kirk Hammett, the bell tolls, was contributed to that and remixed. So he got him eventually.
What in the fuck is up with these Kirk and Lobster Man doodles that they're doing at their shows now?
Well, I guess James probably needs a break, so they're like, well, let's do something, and they just do goofy covers, usually specific to the area that they're playing, like covering Prince in Minnesota, And it works, not in that they play them well, but they get coverage every time they do it.
Yeah, that must be the game.
So it's genius marketing.
Right.
I guess so, but I watch these videos and I'm like, this is the most amateurish shit that I've ever seen. Like, literally, I was able to play better than this when I was in high school. Because man. It's clear that, like, seriously, what is the bass player's name?
Robert Trujillo. He's a very good bassist.
He is,
not with Metallica and not doing this.
He is, and, you know, Kirk is a good guitarist, but it's clear that they haven't, you know, ever practiced these songs that they're doing. Neither one of them should be singing ever.
I think that's why they do it, because it's funny.
Well, I mean, if you've ever heard recent Metallica live, they're not even good at covering their own songs, so I wouldn't expect them to do any better with anybody else's.
Just going back to the Judgment Night soundtrack, do you think that will something like that would ever happen again?
No.
I don't know. Sure. I think that we've already mash up everything there is to mash up. I mean, once you had Accidental Racist with LL Cool J and God, what chud country fucking guy was that? Brad Paisley together. Yeah. Like, how much further can you go?
Well, I just think there's such a divide now between like metal and hip hop and rap. I mean, it's always been there to be sure, but I feel like during this time in the early 90s, they were a lot closer. I think there was some sort of mutual respect or like some crossover enjoyment, like with Cypress Hill and like with Onyx, some of these other groups that I guess were heavier and went harder that kind of fit in more with the metal genre. And it feels like now, I mean, not that we're way into any of that, you know, underground hip hop and rap sort of thing, but it feels like that doesn't exist anymore.
Well, I think it's closer than ever now, because you've got dudes like Space Ghost Perp, like, who is very much like a hip hop fan. Lil Ugly Mane, who like is a noise artist when he's not rapping really well and tours with metal bands. Power Trip is played with the third guy. Shit, I can't remember his name. The Memphis trap dude from the 90s, like. I think it's closer than ever. I remember seeing, God damn, I can't remember any names today.
Well, let me ask then, if it's closer than ever, then why haven't we gotten stuff like
that? Well, what I'm trying to say is that back in the 90s and the early outs, rock music had a lot more mainstream appeal. You would have people that would be equally excited for one of these major rap groups as well as one of these major rock groups. So there was a big public interest in seeing both those get together. I don't think that's true anymore. I think rap has sort of ascended so far up as far as popularity is concerned over rock music. I mean, I just don't think that if you had, like, I don't know, Post Malone do a collaboration with Def Heaven, I think 99% of Post Malone fans are going to go, who? You know, and then Post Malone's going to be helping Def Heaven out. Whereas I think back then it was a lot more mutual.
By the way, like, Post Malone is in, I think, every photo with metal dudes that I see recently.
Yeah, no, I guess that's why he's on top of my head when I'm thinking of this. But
I wasn't able to see Mammoth Grinder the last time they came to town because they were opening up for this rapper dude called Antoine. And, like, he was such a bigger draw, like, of course it was sold out. So I think that, yeah, the balance has really shifted there.
For sure. I think rap just, it's a lot. It's easier to sell, and that's not against its credit. I mean, it's just metal has kind of gone so far south as far as underground is concerned. Like, we've whittled it down to, like, the most extreme stuff most of the time. And you might have some bands emerge above ground, but you notice the trend when they do that, it's with a more mainstream sound. So if you have something like Bring Me the Horizon, where they started off very deathcore and then eventually got to making Coldplay music or whatever, it's just how it is. You know, you can't be deathcore and then, you know, make it to the Grammys or make it to a television commercial or anything else. So.
Yeah, I mean, that's a fair point. It is weird to kind of exist in a place where there are like a dozen different white dudes with face tattoos that are rappers that I'm familiar with that have never heard like a moment of one of their songs, but I just know that they like are like some of the biggest musicians right now among the youths.
Like, because they're online too much.
That is true.
I hadn't heard of Mac Miller until he died. I didn't know I haven't seen a thing about him. I had no idea who he was.
He was, I guess, really popular on YouTube a few years back. Like, he was kind of like a YouTube rapper was his deal.
Yeah.
I don't know what Lil Xan sounds like, but I see his face all the time, and it makes me angry. So I'm probably not going to check that one out.
But what's really cool is that whereas we have like all this underground stuff that we're all about, I mean, the rap genre has too forever. There's always been underground rap, and there's always been a huge community of guys who are into that. And you got like, you know, whereas we have Bandcamp bands, they have SoundCloud rappers.
Check out my SoundCloud.
That's right, man. So I don't know. I have no lack of respect for the music, even if it's not my thing. It's always been like a really cool, very in-depth culture. And I think you're going to get a lot of guys who are really, really into rap who fucking hate stuff like, you know, Nicki Minaj and Drake and things like that. Just in the same way that, you know, we hate. Who do we hate? Who sucks now?
Anthrax.
Anthrax? No, that's not Anthrax is cool as hell. And go look on Spotify and see how many listens Anthrax has had versus Metallica. Metallica has had, it's too big for their britches, okay?
All right, so let's just move into this last segment. I tried to be more positive, talk about things that I like with the first 40 minutes of this episode, and you showed me this thing, Jordan. I'm just done. I can't keep going like this.
Yeah, there's a reason why the band's typo negative and not typo positive, because I know you got to be bummed out all the time. Yep. And one of our favorite subjects, and a band that when we talk about, we get drunken phone messages from randos trying to defend them.
Yeah.
Is Five Finger Death Punch.
Yep.
They have a new music video for their song When the Seasons Change. And, you know, this is typical croony nothing bullshit as per usual, but what really got my attention, and I think is why we need to talk about it, is this music video is dedicated specifically to a Las Vegas police officer, Charleston Hartfield, who died last year at the Las Vegas mass shooting, where 58 people were killed at the country music festival. And what really stuck out to me is that they dedicated this video and the song just to this one police officer and not to like the 57 other people who were murdered during this.
Yeah. And or the 489 people that were injured as well.
Yeah. And their families and everyone else who has suffered from mass gun violence over the past, 10 years, let's even just encapsulate it like that, where it's been in a growing epidemic problem in the United States. No, none of those people matter. Mm-hmm. Let's just talk about this police officer. And it's so craven and it's so on brand for this band that likes to, you know, wrap themselves up in the flag and wrap themselves up in camo, pretending to be the military officers and police officers. And it just really bothers me, and I know it bothers you guys too.
I have opinions about some of these things, and I'm gonna take some blood pressure medication before we get into it. Let's just talk about When Seasons Change, the song and the video. The song itself is one of their acoustic numbers, which means that you can expect 3.5 chords.
There you go.
And their meth-addicted singer crooning hard. Crooning Scott Stapley over it.
Nice.
The video itself is baffling. it begins with this white woman and a black man. They're both cops. They're both just the best of friends. The male officer is playfully dangling the cruiser keys haplessly above the short woman officer. And then they both just get gatted the fuck up by Uzis, by a bunch of brown people wearing black masks and then speeding off in a white van.
There was one white woman in a mask, though. That was important and progressive and worth noting. And I think that you guys are being a little unfair here. She was actually considering that.
She was actually Persian, so you know, you get the added Islamophobia with it.
she was in good shape too.
Yeah,
I think that's worth noting.
Yeah. So yeah, it's there's a weird flashback where these two cops are the best of friends since like they were 8 years old. It begins with
Wait. We gotta. So she's at home first.
Right.
And she's got like her flag in a glass case on the mantelpiece. Yeah. And right next to the mantel is a photograph of her as a child next to this black officer who got shot as a child hanging out together lovingly. And then it flashes back.
It flashes back to them becoming friends as kids when the male protects her from bullies by punching a guy in the nose. And they go to what is it called, police academy together, and they meet Steve Guttenberg, and they
grab so much ass during this meet. Like, they're so in love,
they're and constantly the best part of, playing grab ass. Yeah,
and the best part of this, okay, so let's paint the scene. There's a bunch of tall black kids. This girl's playing basketball by herself. This poor little white girl, she's playing basketball all by her lonesome, and these big, mean black kids just surround her, take the ball from her, push her down. And then this little courageous black kid who ends up being the partner, he comes up and he stands up to this taller black kid. And this taller black kid's like, what are you going to do? And he, in like a perfect Arthur meme, it zooms in on his little child fist just clenching with justice. And he fucking knocks this kid out. So... continue.
So we go back.
That was known.
We go back to the future, and the cops, all of a sudden, the lady gets shot in the chest, and the dude just catches a bullet shredding his jugular vein. She's like getting up, you know, the bullet was stopped by her vest, but you know, you don't wear a vest on your neck, huh? So she's just standing over this bleeding dude and picks up his badge that's just soaked in blood, and it shows her, you know, basically being depressed in her home, and then running to the hospital where the officer is revived, thankfully, by the electricity paddles that stopped him from bleeding from his neck.
That removed the bullets.
Yeah, the 1971 paddles they haven't had in a freaking hospital for four decades. But
and it ends with this video is dedicated to the memory of Charleston Hartfield, who was a victim of the Las Vegas shooting. He used his body to shield bullets from innocence. And then it ends. Well, I mean, in some way, every victim of this horrible shooting shielded other people with their bodies because they were being shredded by fucking bullets from
because
a balcony.
Because they were being shot.
And I don't say that to make light of this horrific, horrific event. It's just that is everybody there that was shot, you know, also prevented somebody from behind him from being shot by absorbing those bullets. That's how that shit works. Nobody could see where these bullets were coming from. And nobody could fight back either because everybody was basically in, it was fish in a barrel. But
this guy was a fucking audience member. He wasn't a cop at the moment. He didn't all of a sudden go into cop mode and be full of bullets. You know, it's egregious.
And what gives away the game, the very last frame of this video, is a Blue Lives Matter flag. You've seen it on cars in your neighborhood, I'm sure. It's an American flag with black and white stripes and a single blue line down the middle, showing that Blue Lives Matter, that take, you know, that came from All Lives Matter, that of course came in direct opposition to Black Lives Matter, the movement protesting police violence against minorities. Now,
yeah, which in so many words is like, well, cops get shot too, so shut the fuck up. This isn't a problem.
And let's talk about that for a second, because I would like you to take a look. Go ahead and Google, you folks at home, most dangerous jobs in America, and you'll find that police officer isn't even in the top 20 most dangerous jobs. It is, relatively speaking, a very safe job to have. We should have flags on the back of our car showing solidarity for loggers and for roofers, because those are far and away far more deadly and dangerous than being a cop.
Thin red line, the Alaskan crab fisherman.
Yeah, that's
firemen.
Fireman.
Is that a fireman?
Because I've seen I've seen a pickup truck in my area flying the Blue Lives Matter flag and the Red Lives Matter flag.
Do you think there's some kind of discourse between the two? Do you think the fire spiders shut up and go, "What about firefighters in red line?"
I know for a fact that that is actually a thing.
That's great.
And here's the thing: I don't much like authority. I don't like cops, but I have a tremendous amount of respect for paramedics and firefighters because. That is a job. Those are both jobs where you literally put your body on the line to save another person's life.
It's true.
That you're a first responder, like helping somebody who is in serious peril with specific training and specific equipment and helping save a life. I think that's a great thing to do. And you'll notice that there aren't rallies of people protesting firefighter violence or paramedic violence. and that's because the cops, let me just... Did you guys hear about what happened in Dallas last week?
What, with the lady shooting the guy in the apartment?
This cop gets off her shift, goes to the wrong floor of her apartment, somehow gets inside, thinks to herself, and I don't want to try to get in her mind because I don't know exactly what's going on in there, and my personal hot take is that she came home fucked up.
Fucking drunk.
Drunk as shit. sees what she thinks is her apartment, and somebody who is not her... inside of her apartment and just fucking murders them right then and there. Now, right. Why is it cops, they're constantly fearful for their lives. That's what they say when they get away with murdering somebody who is unarmed. I was afraid for my safety and my partner's safety. So boom, I had to shoot them in the face. Why is it that they're constantly so afraid? And if you're constantly so afraid, why do you have to carry a fucking gun on you?
Civilians are armed. That's the Second Amendment for you. Every cop thinks that everyone else has a gun in their pocket, and in some places that's true. So they're trained that way very specifically. Whenever people give cops shit, it's like they talk about how they should have reacted differently or they shouldn't have pulled their gun first. It's like they are – it's just smashed into their mind for years and years and years and years and years. Like shoot first, ask questions later. The moment somebody doesn't comply, the moment someone reaches or like panics in some strange way and curves their body in a strange way, oh, load them up, center mass. That's how it is.
Yeah, you know what people do when they're afraid? They do strange things because their bodies become unpredictable. When you're just loaded with cortisol and terrified that you're going to get shot, you can't react the way that people want you to. I don't know if you've this cop shot this guy named Daniel Shaver. He was giving him all kinds of commands, move your left arm up, but your right arm down, and put your knees on your butt, and also like be sure to look to the left. And he was unable, like he was terrified of this cop that had a gun in his hands. By the way, not a police issue rifle. This was his own personal rifle engraved with "You're fucked" on the butt of it. And when he couldn't move the way that he commanded, unarmed, terrified, in the middle of a hotel hallway, just lit him up, fucking murdered him. You know what happened to that cop? Nothing. He didn't get arrested. He's not going to have charges pressed against him. He's still a cop.
There was video of that online. The whole thing happened. Everybody saw what happened. It's horrifying.
What can you do?
This guy's sobbing, you know.
My heart was breaking watching this thing, listening to this poor fucking bastard know that he's about to die and he can't stop it. Because what can you do? You've got this fucking sociopath that's just been waiting all of his life to murk somebody.
Yeah, what you don't see behind the body cam is his fucking fully engorged erection while he's doing this. It's fucking disgusting, man. It's like, it takes a certain kind of person to become a cop. And it's like, God, I have a family full of them. And it's like, this is kind of a personal story, and I'm not going to specifically say who, but it's like one of my cop family members, he's like showing me this video of him and his buddy fucking partner like laughing hysterically at this like super, super strung out on heroin guy just walking around. And he's like showing it to me, expecting me to just like laugh along to it. And I'm just like, this guy needs help. What are you doing?
Yeah, this is somebody who is on the bottom rung of society, barely fucking alive, and you're like, ha, what a piece of shit. I think that's indicative of like the mindset of cops, because they're not there to serve and protect. They're there to punish. You've seen all the cop cars that are, you know, cops are getting in trouble for putting Punisher decals on their fucking cars, right? The Punisher, That's that famous superhero that helps people.
Right. He saves the day by loading bullets into every face of a person he doesn't like and he thinks deserves it. It's weird, man. And I just, you know, I've been surrounded by cops and army people in my family my whole life. Like, it's just it does things to you, and you got to start a certain way to want to get into it in the first place.
Well, it's a worship of violence and authority that goes into this. And the military and the police, they're in, you know, granted, I don't know if it was this way before 9/11 because I was a child and I could barely, you know, tie my own shoes.
Yeah.
But the idea of supporting the troops and supporting the cops and back the blue and all of this worship of authority and the violence that authority can bring through and never, ever questioning it. Questioning it.
Well, it starts in when we're young in elementary school. Officer Bob comes in and, you know, tells you to obey the laws, and they have the DARE programs. Used to be police officers coming in saying, don't do drugs. So it's like the cigarette companies hook them while they're young.
I remember the DARE officer encouraging kids to narc on their parents.
Yeah, right. And I mean, you stand up for the flag and you obediently do it, or else you'll get in legitimate, like, detention level trouble. And that just goes through your whole life until eventually you have people taking selfies with the American flag saying, or holding their gun to their chest saying, I dare you to disrespect it. It's like, man, you were fucked up at 4 years old. That's why you're like this.
This weird nationalistic worship of the flag and of the cops and of the military. It's like, what have these things ever done for you?
Man, like, it's the least
metal. Has a cop ever helped you? I have never had help from a cop. It's never been a thing that's been useful for me. It's just been a source of trouble and strife.
I've called the cops before because it's, you know, I've lived in dangerous areas and I've always been raised up as it's the right thing to do. And the last few times I did it have solidified that I'm never going to do it again unless I'm in some sort of legal obligation to do so, like in a car accident or otherwise. But what you get is this guy who just doesn't have fucking time for you. He doesn't care about your problems. He'd rather be playing Candy Crush in the corner of some street somewhere, which is what they're fucking paid to do. Don't get me wrong on that. That's what they do for a job. And he shows up and he thinks you're a huge pussy because you didn't take care of this yourself or whatever. So you might as well just take care of it yourself because they're not there to help you. You're just making him fill out a report, you know, in whatever illiterate gibberish he's going to have to put on a piece of paper that he doesn't have time to do. That's what you're making him do. And, you know, God knows he probably won't even do it. And whoever wronged you is going to get off in court because of it. So just don't even fucking bother.
I guess it's the disdain for the people they're supposed to be helping is just palpable.
Yeah.
I wanted to bring it back to Five Finger Death Punch because there was a quote from the guitarist Zoltan Bathory about this video that I wanted to read to you guys, and feel free to stop me at any point because you will want to.
We stop you a lot. I'm going to let you, let's let you finish.
All right. So Bathory about the video said, and I quote, instead of giving you a typical quote about the music video, let me give you some data to ponder. Medical malpractice is the third leading cause of death in the USA, right behind heart disease and cancer. Some research says an average of 250,000 people die every year because of medical errors. In contrast, police officers make an average of 50 fatal errors annually. That's 245,950 less. And most of them are due to split-second decisions in high-risk situations.
Wait, is he saying that cops kill 50 people annually? Because I don't think that's accurate, man.
And I continue. Of course, loss of life is always tragic, but we don't pull all medical professionals on blast or call them names, disrespect them, and demonize them. Of course not. They're doing their best. And it would be just as ridiculous as the current grossly unfair rhetoric against police as a whole.
So
they haven't heard what I said about doctors, man.
we bemoan the loss of life, unless it's those fucking towel heads in Afghanistan, am I right? America, stand up. Kill them all. Let God sort them out. Fucking piece of shit.
Did you see those Mexicans with the masks on in the video? Oh, yeah. And how they deserved it?
It's Nash. Never mind. Go
classic,
ahead.
It's classic whataboutism. And I, on top of really questioning those, quote, some research.
I love it. It's just, how fucking unmetal can you get? It's you're a class traitor.
You are a cynical piece of shit. There is nothing cool or rebellious about staunchly standing up for the imperialist death machine that lines your pockets. It's like conservatism is the new punk rock. It's like, get the fuck out of here. You're getting paychecks from 80-year-old billionaires.
Oh, man.
And in this article, it was on Blabbermouth, which is pretty much a regurgitated press release. Under his quote, it was just another thing I wanted to read. It says, a rare voice of support in the entertainment world, the members of Five Finger Death Punch have been longtime supporters of veteran and law enforcement entities. Just this week, the group again made good on this promise and donated a portion of the ticket sales from its massive summer North American outdoor amphitheater tour, equaling $95,000, to COPS, Concerns of Police Survivors, whose mission is rebuilding shattered lives of survivors and co-workers affected by line-of-duty deaths through partnerships with law enforcement and the community. Again, ignoring all of these people that have been injured and murdered by police officers.
Yeah, so it's not the victims of the cops. No. It's the guys that get a lifetime pension through their union and it can never, ever be fired for any reason whatsoever. And have just like the best insurance. That's great. I love that.
Or go on speaking tours, getting paid to talk about their experiences or dealing with the press after something like this happens.
I am glad that Five Finger Death Punch could reduce their tax debt for the year by giving it to these fucking cops. It's been a deep sickness in America for a long time, and it gets worse and worse every day. Where there's this weird elevation of cops and troops above all other civilians. It's like, you guys have seen Starship Troopers, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, you know, Robert Heinlein's fever dream of nationalistic fascism. Only the military are full citizens that have the right to vote. That's what these people want. They want a permanent underclass of civilians. Of the people that supposedly these cops and troops are supposed to serve. By the way, if another person tells me that like somebody shooting children in Afghanistan is fighting for my freedoms, I will punch them in the nose. Mm. What freedoms is that kid taking from me? I don't know, man.
I hear that shit every day. You better get your Arthur Beam clench on, man. I also think that the dream of the person who made the Starship Troopers movie is that eventually all men and women together will take showers with one another.
Okay, well, that was Paul Verhoeven, who is both a genius and a creep. that was his take on Heinlein's novel is just this right-wing fever dream, and Verhoeven read it and he's like, oh man, this is hella fucked up. I gotta make a movie that just, you know, takes the piss out of this. And in the future there will be co-showering spaces, and also hopefully all the cops will be replaced by RoboCops.
Sick. I love it. Because I think the robots would, I feel like robots can figure this stuff out a little bit better.
Yeah, is that child carrying a gun? No. Okay, don't shoot it then.
It's like there's some sort of algorithm that will let them know, okay, this guy is coming at me with a snow shovel. Clearly, there's a better way to handle this than a 9mm or 45. I think the issue is a 45.
I posted the picture in the Toilet Hall Facebook group last week of Pig Destroyer taking a chummy photo with some tattooed cops. And like there were a couple of people I think kind of took offense with some of the rhetoric that was going around on there. Like, you know, Pig Destroyer might be sellouts. You know, it was a jokey photo. Who the fuck knows? But it's a bummer to see that regardless. But let's imagine, like, let's try to imagine a future anyway where you don't have cops heavily armed with all of this military-grade equipment, swatting people because a YouTuber got mad at them and then murdering an innocent person, not shooting children in the park because they got a squirt gun, not with body cam footage murdering a sobbing man because he can't follow the incredibly complicated directions that a psychopath is giving him. And let's imagine a future of like policing that is kind of like the paramedics and the firefighters.
Right. Like they I'm never to, like I'm never going to go sorry, go ahead. Sorry.
They basically a force that exists to help people when they're in emergency, not necessarily with violence and punitive force, because that is what the cops do now. They arrest people for being destitute, or they shoot them for, I don't know, looking at them funny, and fill up our prison. You know, we've got the highest prison population in the world. That's not a coincidence. That's what the police do. Let's imagine a future where it's a community service that gets people the help that they need and disarms situations when they're getting out of hand. Not with violence, but with help.
Right. I think, of course, you know, that happens. You will see that in law enforcement. But I think it's
I'm not so myopic that I'm going to say that all cops everywhere have done nothing but terrible things. Of course, you have officers that have helped people. That is right. A thing that happens. It's just not the norm.
Right. And I think you can have I mean, law enforcement is necessary. I'm never going to be one of these fucking grown children online who's like, no more cops. And like, you know, just be one of those like libertarian anarcho morons. I think law enforcement is necessary, but I think the culture very, very much needs to change. I think the training needs to change first. Right now, I think that one of the ways to do it is to seriously restrict the guns that are available in the American populace. Unfortunately, that has to happen first so that you don't have cops that are just fucking trigger happy and assuming and being trained that everybody has, you know, some. God, guns aren't cheap, man. Like, how can we all have them? It's really strange. But like,
two fell out of my pocket just now.
Oh. I have some behind the cupboard here, but it's just, you know,
I'm made out of guns.
Yeah. I am made of guns. But yeah, I think that we have to take a serious look at the state of our nation and do some shit differently so that we can work this all out.
And we don't need bands like Five Finger Death Punch and Bad Wolves getting on the wheel of cops, promoting cops trend, I guess you could say.
I think a useful thing to look to do with bands like Bad Wolves and Five Finger Death Punch is you basically just need to look at them as the same disdain as somebody that says to the teacher, oh, you forgot to assign homework. Cop calling pussy.
Right. Yeah. Very true.
Like, you're just a bootlicker, man. Like, that's it. Are we gonna have a pop quiz?
You forgot to give us homework.
Bring.
So, if you see these bands, give them a fucking wedgie. I know they're covered in tattoos and tactical gear, but they're pussies because they love the cops. That's how it works. Sorry, yeah. I don't make the rules.
It's like Bill McAngry or whatever he calls himself, the little short one. You can just probably pick him up by his camo shorts and put him right in the toilet. It'll be easy.
I think somehow he's shorter than Phil Labonte.
Somehow.
He's Ben Shapiro height.
Wow. Well,
Mindy Moody.
Makes him all that much easier to hang up on the flagpole where he wants to be so bad. Yep. Flying high with the magic sky rag that we need to sing the magic song for, or else it doesn't freedom.
Y'all got to tear it all down. That's what we got to do. And maybe, you know, we got to stop letting this band sell records. That too.
Yeah. And listen to bands like Horrendous. They rule.
Yeah, it's a good band. Is there anything else you guys want to get on this episode? I got to take my heart medication now.
Yeah, same. I think we're good. I think we've covered a lot of good bases. I think we got positive. I think that's a good mix. We can go to somewhere that's, you know, oh, this was kind of cool. This happened, and then we can go right back into the worst thing ever.
Yeah,
because that's what you're here for. It's what you subscribed to.
We've got range.
That's right,
Jordan. What else you got?
Follow us on Twitter at Toilet of Hell, at Joe Thrashkill, at 365 Days of Horror, at That's Not Metal. You could always send us an email at toiletofhellradio@gmail.com. And always remember that Five Finger Death Punch does not care about you.
Yep. They just want your money. They don't care about your safety or your freedom. But I love you. I'll see you next week.
But keep it metal, bros.
Bye.
Listening to 66.6 FM, Radio TOVH, The Flush.